When I say hacker, you think what? Julian Assange of WikiLeaks infamy started out as a hacker, but the U.S. is now looking into whether it might be possible to prosecute him under the Espionage Act. On the other hand, Robert Morris was a hacker. He unleashed what's thought to be the first computer worm back in the late 80s, destroying 6,000 computers. He's now a professor at MIT. So what kind of people are hackers? Gabriella Coleman is an assistant professor in the Department of Media, Culture, and Communication at NYU. She's teaching a course on the anthropology of hackers. Let's find out what she's learned. She joins us from the studios of WMYC. And Professor, you say in general, hackers tend to embrace both privacy and information freedom, although some question intellectual property rights. You found there's a commitment among hackers not to destroy other people's property, but some believe that the kind of virus writing that Robert Morris did is acceptable. So what did you find hackers want to achieve through hacking?
That's a great question, because to answer that is to recognize the sort of diversity, multiplicity, and plurality of hacking. And so while there's a certain set of commitments that bind hackers together, especially a great pleasure in learning, exploration, computing, there's also quite a bit that divides hackers. So some hackers are committed to software freedom. These are free and open source software hackers.
And by that, you mean what? They would want to write code to help people get access to information.
Right. They believe the underlying directions of software, which is called source code, should never be put under lock and key, which is usually done through patents and copyright. So they've created alternative legal systems, such as the copyleft, to make sure that source code is eternally available.
Right, but how does that square with the fact that you say they also believe in privacy?
Well, when it comes to privacy, they believe it has to do with personal data, for example. So your social security number, what goes on in the house, your body as you go through an airport scanner, for example, which they would treat as a different form of information than source code, which they consider something which can improve the art of software.
So, for instance, the hackers who hit the huge store TJ Maxx and released credit card information, they might be looked down on by other hackers who believe that that kind of private information should be kept private.
Absolutely. And other hackers might also say they've exposed a security vulnerability in the system. And while releasing credit card information is problematic and dangerous to the people whose information is released, fixing the security hole furthers the sort of goal of security, which is another kind of focus of some computer hackers.
We want to ask more about the history, because you point back that hackers are just a modern day version of different types of people. But we just want to ask, so you have Julian Assange. He started as a hacker. He believes in the freedom of information. But he's another one. You could say today that through WikiLeaks releasing information, he can be one person's hero, but another person's vision of a traitor.
Absolutely. He's a lightning rod for controversy. And what should be public is not always agreed upon, even among people who believe, for example, there should be more transparency in governments. They do believe some information, such as information relating to war and security, must be partially public and not fully public. So that's one of the reasons why WikiLeaks is so controversial.
Well, in the course you teach at NYU, and by the way, you write about it in The Atlantic magazine, and we can link to that at our website, herenow.org. It's pretty astonishing how much reading you require. And the kind of if anyone thinks they're going to sail in and just play with their computer, forget it. But also the kind of reading you require, because you look at this from an anthropological standpoint, taking us back to Aristotle and Nietzsche. Explain how you draw those lines.
So one thing that's quite clear when you study or spend time with hackers is that pleasure marks everything that they do. And one of the reasons why we go to Aristotle and Nietzsche is because both of them provide different theories of pleasure by which to understand the pleasures of hacking. Aristotle has a theory of pleasure, which is a little bit about the pleasure of learning, of developing capacities and skills, which he calls eudaimonia. And this is very, very common for all sorts of hackers who are learning and improving their craft. And it's endless. You're always learning because the pace of change is so quick. On the other hand, pleasure can be far more euphoric, encompassing. In hacker jargon, it's called deep hack mode. And basically, you may be hacking for 18 hours straight, not stopping for food or sleep. And here, Nietzsche's theories of pleasure are far more instructive. And that's one of the reasons why we turn to him.
Tell us a little more.
He explores pleasure and creation and creativity by contrasting Apollonian theories of creativity, which is the cool, the calm, the logical. Think mathematics,
right,
which is very, very common in hacking. On the other hand, he also celebrates a far more euphoric, kind of uncontrolled dimension of pleasure, which he explores through Dionysus. And this is a mode of pleasure where you lose the self almost entirely. And this, again, captures that other kind of dimension of pleasure in which the hacker no longer is even aware of him or herself. There's a stereotype that hackers are extremely asocial,
right,
which I also think is pretty off the mark. They often come together and celebrate hacking in these great Dionysian sort of festivals. They could last for a week. They're camping outdoors in Germany and the Netherlands, really celebrating that which they love.
Is there a danger zone?
Well, it always ends. At some point, your body demands sleep or food. Or alternatively, and this is quite important in terms of understanding hacker pleasure, it's built on frustration as well. So you might be in a sprint where you're in the zone. And you really, hackers do seem to get into the zone far more than, let's just say, academics. And yet, invariably, you encounter a bug, a glitch, a problem, a set of frustrations. And that gets you out of the deep hack mode and gets you online asking questions to other hackers desperately seeking help. And so in that sense, it's kind of a back and forth, a dialectic, an oscillation between deep pleasure and deep frustration. And in that sense, I don't think it's a danger.
Gabrielle Coleman, she's a professor of anthropology at NYU and is teaching a very scholarly course about hackers, who they are, what they think. She asks her students to read Aristotle, Nietzsche, Stephen Levy's Crypto Rebels, and How PGP Works, Why Do You Need PGP by Phil Zimmerman. That's about encryption. It's just a really tough course. Gabriella, tell us more about who they are. How do they think? What are the things that have to come easy to a hacker in order for hacking to be pleasurable?
I would say there has to be a facility with logic and detail. That's extremely important. But you can say, well, that's the case for all of the engineering arts, and that's absolutely the case. And I would say what differentiates hacking is that there's not only that logic and extreme attention to detail, there's also a desire to make something work slightly different. And that requires looking at things upside down, getting up on the table and looking at the problem from a different vista, in a sense. And so hackers are always focused on seeing how they can undermine the system or push it in a slightly different way. And this requires a tremendous amount of creativity, kind of something that we see as the antithesis of logic. But the two kind of meld together, kind of extreme creativity, freewheeling thought, as well as extreme dedication to logic and detail.
Yeah. Well, and as you've been saying, there are hackers who consider themselves invaluable purveyors of information. There are some people who view hackers as more nefarious. But either way, they have a very recent ancestor in phone freakers. Remind people of phone freakers, P-H-R-E-A-K.
Phone freakers, who weren't named as such until 1973, but existed prior to 1973, would tap into this phone system, either using perfect pitch or later on electronic blue boxes. And they would tap into the phone system to make free phone calls, learn about the phone system, as well as find each other and talk to each other through conference calls, also called party lines.
You know, some people would say, well, they were stealing from the phone company.
Absolutely. Definitely their actions at some level can be considered illegal. On the other hand, freakers might say, well, we're not actually taking anything away from anyone, and we're oftentimes understanding the phone system, which in the end can also improve it.
Yeah. And so how do you round out the class? What are some of the other things you teach? Just trip through them.
One element that we look at is the logic of craftsmanship. So hacking, on the one hand, is very new, the logic of craft goes back centuries and centuries. So Richard Sennett's book, The Craftsman, really helps us in that regard.
Because do you see hackers as they rewrite code? And do you see them as, you know, the same kind of people who would make handmade tables?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No doubt about it. In fact, the largest free software projects, some of which have 1,000 members, are kind of organized a little bit like guilds. I mean, they're far more transparent and meritocratic than we sort of think guilds have historically been run. But nonetheless, they have masters, they have mentorships, they have processes by which you enter. And very much the process of learning the craft is never ending and really requires a kind of communal process where you really must lean heavily on the help of others. So absolutely, very, very much a craft logic is at work.
And just one other aspect of the course. We know you teach about how it's so possible to be provocative and to be a saboteur online, the internet troll.
The troll is a fascinating, fascinating figure, which on the one hand must be differentiated from a hacker. A troll, the purpose of a troll is to cause disruption, to be offensive. And trolling has existed as long as people got together online. The online medium is perfect for trolling, but it's really exploded in the last number of years. And I believe one of the reasons why it has exploded is because transgressive hacking of the type where you didn't do anything malicious, but you definitely did something illegal. You maybe broke into a server and explored how it worked. That form of hacking is less common now because the repercussions for doing so are extremely heavy-handed, extremely heavy-handed. And in that context where the punishment is so severe, trolling kind of, in some respects, I think, took its place because it's not really illegal with a few exceptions.
Well, it's pranking, tricks.
Offensive language.
Yeah. Doing it for what they call the lulz, L-U-L-Z. What's that?
The lulz, L-U-L-Z, which is a bastardization and pluralization of L-O-L, laugh out loud.
Oh.
And it means just for the fun of it, just for the pleasure.
Just give us one example of trolling.
Well, let me give you two examples. A very minor example has to do with me, whereby I was going to Ireland to visit a group of internet geeks and hackers who are protesting the Church of Scientology. That protest movement originally started because they just wanted to troll the Church of Scientology.
Play tricks on it.
Right. They bombarded the Dianetics hotline. They sent hundreds of pizzas to different churches. Eventually, it became a serious protest movement. And so that's one example. And then a very kind of minor example is when I was going to visit this group in Ireland, they announced it on their message board and put a picture of me, except they cut my head off.
Oh.
And so that's just a great example of, you know, let's shock her a little bit. It's pretty hard to shock me, although that's why that's one of the reasons why I'd be a great target for trolling as well.
Well, okay. That's Gabriella Coleman. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Media, Culture, and Communication at NYU and teaches a course on the anthropology of hackers. Professor Coleman, Gabriella, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.